This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. Science fiction is a genre dominated by white men. So Karen Lord is something of an outlier. She's a woman, first of all, but she's also a native of Barbados and as such brings a decidedly Caribbean perspective to her novels. In her most recent novel, The Best of All Possible Worlds, she imagines a universe where groups of humans have spread out across the galaxy and evolved separately. She follows one group of men who survived the destruction of their home planet. They have to travel to a planet populated by their distant ancestors. Karen Lord is in town, making various appearances around the Triangle. First, this Saturday, she's going to be at the Bull Specs Summer Speculative Fiction event at Quail Ridge Books in Raleigh. There, she will be joined by Sam Montgomery Blinn, who is the publisher of Bull Spec Speculative Fiction Magazine. And now I'd like to welcome both of you to the program. Sam and Karen, welcome to The State of Things. Good to have you here.
Thank you, Frank. Always good to be back.
Thank you so much.
And Karen, welcome to the Triangle. Did you ever imagine that North Carolina would be a haven for science fiction writers?
I did, in fact, think to myself that North Carolina, not necessarily a haven for science fiction writers, but definitely a haven for writers. I've always associated a certain level of, literary theme with the area for some reason.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of good reason to think that, and science fiction certainly is part of that whole. I think part of what makes the state great and what makes writing so much fun. Tell us about your particular approach or the approach that you take to your work.
I take an approach that's kind of I don't want to say haphazard. That would sound unprofessional.
Right.
Maybe we could use the term organic.
Okay.
I kind of have two jobs, and one of my second job involves research into sociology, but my background is also in physics and astronomy. So sometimes in terms of coming together with a fictional account, what you're really taking is the facts and the information and other things you've absorbed over time and that you can keep up to date with. And you start asking yourself some what-ifs. You start asking yourself some questions and seeing some scenarios and thinking, well, if I were to put these kind of characters in this kind of setting, what kind of story might evolve? That's where the inspiration comes from. And then the second part, really, is when you look back over your draft and you see where the story is and you prune and edit and rewrite a bit and just guide it precisely where you want it to go. That's it for what I've done so far. I do find that every book has its own approach in a way.
Right,
it teases you in a different way, and sometimes you find that you're doing something in a completely different fashion that you never expected.
We think about science fiction or speculative fiction, we think about writers creating whole new worlds. So I wonder if you've thought about what being from Barbados does for your writing and in a way that it may or may not set your writing apart from other science fiction writers.
I do think that, well, I think everybody acknowledges that where you come from does impart some kind of flavor, some kind of cultural flavor that's going to be a little different. But I come from a microstate. I come from a country that's 21 miles long and 14 miles wide, 250,000 people. And what that does is that you actually don't have the leisure to be insular. You do tend to look out quite a bit. It's a place that has a lot of people visiting. It's a place that has a lot of history connected to people who've come from other continents, from India, of course, India, Africa, Europe, the Americas. It all has a nexus there. And it perhaps makes you a little more aware of the world in a way that you wouldn't have to be if you were on a large continent and had a lot of variation right around you within your own borders.
Sam, obviously Karen has thought about this and her place and what it means to her writing. As you look across the spectrum of speculative writing, can you see the influence of place on particular writers and how they bring their sense of their own locale to something that allows them to create whole new worlds?
Oh, absolutely. If you look at the tradition of Russian science fiction, for example, you can see a completely different genesis of the political background, the cosmopolitan background, the different things that go into those books. If you look South America at Borges and these other writers, there's just a completely different spectrum. And as you said, but at the same time, so much work, especially in the last 50 years, as we've all been able to get access to everybody's works, I think there's so much more cross-pollination than there's ever been. So I think what we see is in Karen's work, and especially with her podcast that she's done, You can see those influences. You can see that she's read Olive Stapledon. You can see that she's read Chenna Mieville. And you can see where all these things are coming in. And it was interesting to hear Karen's answer to that question, actually.
Well, obviously, Karen, you are, you've read other science fiction writers, but you're also familiar with folktales. Your first novel was inspired by a Senegalese folktale, and you decided to make that also the basis for your first novel, Redemption in Indigo. Did you?
Yes.
Or why did you decide that that was, you know, what was it about that folktale?
It was this folktale that was one of my favorites from a very early age. And it was part of a series of various stories for children. But that particular volume focused on folktales from all over the world. And there was something in the flavor of that folktale that was so uniquely familiar to what I knew from my own culture that I kind of formed an attachment to it. The protagonist, Palma, was a woman that I recognized, a woman that whose approach I appreciated very much. And that just sort of stuck with me from age four or so on up. And I kept thinking to myself, what else happened with her? What more could have happened in her life? And finally, I had the chance to write it.
Can you give us a summary of that folktale?
Well, it is a kind of a humorous one in the vein of people making idiots of themselves. It's a woman who has left her husband. She's gone back to her family, because her husband is, in fact, a bit of an embarrassment to her. And he finds out where she is, and he goes to try and persuade her to come back to him. But while he's there, he keeps embarrassing himself in particular ways. And specifically, he's a glutton. He can't help himself. Any chance he gets to eat food, he will eat food. So there are various incidences where he's stealing crops and getting his head stuck in a mortar and so forth. And each time she tries to get him out of the scrape, usually successfully, the first thing she says is, "How did you do this?" And he says, "Don't act as if you didn't know me." And there was something about that phrase in particular that was particularly amusing to me, because you have someone who gets himself in trouble, and instead of feeling upset or ashamed or anything like that, they make it sound as if, you know, it's your fault.
It's
you know what I'm like. You should have had control over me.
Not surprising that it's the man who blames the woman for all of his troubles as well. But it seems to me that folktales and science fiction have a lot in common in that they get at the truth through these somewhat more wild flights into the imagination.
It's kind of, I like the way you've put that. I do think that there's a different level of expression that happens in a folktale or in a science fiction story, which perhaps taps in more to the subconscious in some ways.
Yeah.
So you're not getting a very realist sort of direct, this is how it is, but you're just getting an image. It's more evocative. And I think in the hands of people who are quite skilled at storytelling, it becomes one of my favorite approaches.
Sam, would you call it that speculative fiction, science fiction, is the sort of modern version of the well-worn folktale?
It's hard to say for me. I think folktales seem to be this received tradition, and so much of science fiction today is this projective tradition. Obviously, we all incorporate all the stories we've heard over our entire lives to become the storytellers that we become. I agree with Karen. I like the way you put it about coming towards this truth with imagination. But for me, I think one is a received, augmented tradition, and the other one is really this projective tradition.
But that tells us a lot about who we are and how we relate to our ancestors. We are a forward, especially Americans, I would say, kind of characterized by our forward-looking and not backward-looking. And so if we're going to have a folk tradition, that's perhaps the way it's going to look. I don't know if you want to speculate on that, but either you or Karen on the idea that that's a kind of a cultural artifact of ours.
I do think that the concept of the folktale does evolve in its own way. So I would agree with that. And even what we think of as you say, received tradition and what you say, projected tradition,
mm-hmm.
I think the lines begin to blur a little bit. When you have, there are some stories that take elements of both or take elements of what's received and then they extrapolate a little further to say, okay, here we are now and here's where we've come from, but look at where we could go. And that becomes a very fascinating tale in itself.
Karen, you are a writer who is female and who is black, and I wonder in the science fiction tradition if that feels, certainly if we look across the spectrum, we don't see many people like that. Do you feel, does it make you feel unusual to you to be in that position?
I am thinking deeply about the question because in a way I feel as if I should say yes, it makes me feel unusual. But the reality is that I think I feel more unusual on the basis of being a Caribbean author than on the basis of being a woman and being of color. And, of course, the reality as well is that you can't separate them. It's not enough just to say, you know, I'm a black female writer. Being from the Caribbean is very much intertwined with that. Having the perspectives that I do because of what I've studied also intertwines with that. There are many aspects that make me feel very much as if I have a specific niche in the writing community.
Well, Sam, let me ask you about that niche and that position that Karen holds in the speculative fiction, science fiction community.
Well, I agree with what she said about the Caribbean focus. You see that in, you know, this is how she was exposed to those folktales that became the genesis of the first book. And I think when you look at some of the themes in The Best of All Possible Worlds, these themes of colonization, of all these kind of micro, you know, she said she's from a micro state, but these are all these different colonies with these different populations all intertwining and mixing. And that happens much more in the tradition where she's from. And you can see maybe more in common with her writing and maybe Tobias Bakel's writing, who is also a Caribbean, has a Caribbean heritage, than you could with say, Octavia Butler's fiction, who comes from an American African-American tradition.
Yeah, and it's interesting, too, to think about what you said, Karen, about coming from a micro state, a place where you cannot afford to be, or whether you could afford it or not, simply cannot be in isolation, and also a state that is acutely aware of its colonial past. Here in the United States, we are famously or infamously isolated because of our vast expanse, and I have a hard time imagining ourselves as colonizers, which we have become. So it seems to me that science fiction, speculative fiction is a great way to get at our imagination, to sort of upend our complacency about the colonizers that we've become. What would you think about that?
I do think it's an excellent medium for it, but the question always is, when you write that kind of story, does the reader recognize themselves in the depiction that you've given them?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that's always, you can always sort of point to somebody else and say, well, I'm glad I'm not that guy.
Exactly.
Yeah. Hey, Sam, tell us about this event coming up at Quail Ridge. What's the celebration going to be like?
So this is the third year we've tried this, and this one is going to be much more like the first year, where the genesis is really Anne and Jeff Vandermeer, award-winning authors and editors, coming to the Triangle because they help run this teen writing camp at Wofford College in South Carolina. So they're this kind of core seed package that brings authors like Karen into the area and other authors. And, you know, it was Anne and Jeff's idea back to start this. And so basically Anne and Jeff, Karen, an Asheville author, Nathan Ballingrud, Robert V.S. Reddick, Will Hindmarch, and Durham's Mer Lafferty. It's going to be a big kind of celebration of imaginative, creative fiction. The last time we did this, I think almost everyone left with this kind of creative high of, wow, all these creative people and imaginative storytellers, and everyone's going to get a chance to talk about their fiction, their process, hopefully read a little bit from their stories and tell us what they're working on next. And one of the great things that we get to do is when you get that many really interesting people in the room together, and the audience will be a big mix of readers and authors and other people, and they'll get a chance to ask questions to the panel. And I think this is going to be another great event.
Tell us about Bull Speck. We had you on when Bull Speck was born, or shortly thereafter, 3 years ago. It's been going 3 years now. Give us an overview.
Well, in April, we put out issue number 8. It was kind of the goal all along to do 2 years of two issue runs to see where it went, where it took off. And it just didn't end up getting that kind of critical mass to become a successful magazine that we can keep going. So the plan now is, you know, I think we've really done a lot of great work. We've published a lot of local authors, brought a lot of really interesting stories from elsewhere to the Triangle readers. But the plan is to kind of put everything together, get one more great Best We Can Do issue out, and then kind of move on to the next stage, which will be more of an online thing, more of a kind of cheerleading around all the great authors we have in the area.
Well, you know, the online move is sort of the obvious move, and I'm guessing what everybody told you, Sam, don't go tangible on us. It is a gorgeous magazine. It's a beautiful artifact and has been from the beginning. And yet, is there room anymore for a hard copy in this medium or others? Or
I think absolutely. I just think I did not come from any kind of experience of running a business, so I think a lot of the reasons that it didn't take off and be successful is because I made a lot of learning mistakes along the way, and I look back and I think, oh, if I'd only done this, or maybe if I could still do this, and it's just not something that I did successfully. I can see the areas where someone could come along and do this kind of thing, and it happens time and time again. I think magazines come, magazines go. Now with Kickstarter going, we see these original anthology series kicking up one after another, and I think there's definitely room. People love to hold in their hands these things and kind of, it's not just to show on the shelf, but it's to have with them, to read. The tactile experience of reading a physical product is not something that completely goes away, even in this world of tablets and other things.
Well, and glossy photographs in your hand allow you to sort of work the light in different ways that you simply can't do on mm-hmm. your screen. But Karen, I wonder what you think about how important these kinds of hard copy, tangible medium, magazines are to the world of science fiction.
I think they're very important, and I think that whenever possible, we should try to have both a hard copy and an online presence, because I know that a lot of science fiction readers are very much tech-savvy and are very much involved in the Internet, but there's still quite a large number of readers who are going to be going into a physical library, into a public library, and picking up something off the shelf, and that may be the only way they will get access to that particular publication.
I want to thank you both for being on the program. Karen Lord is an author. Her latest book is called The Best of All Possible Worlds. Sam Montgomery Blinn is the publisher of Bull Spec, Speculative Fiction Magazine. You can catch Karen Lord and her variety at a variety of events around the Triangle. She's going to be at Quail Ridge Books Saturday from 7 until 9 for the third annual Bull Spec Summer Speculative Fiction event. She's also going to be at Orange County Library on Sunday, Chapel Hill Library on Monday afternoon, and Flyleaf Books Monday evening. For more details, go to our website, stateofthings.org. And that's our program. Thanks for listening. This is North Carolina Public Radio. It's a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.